It was a busy summer, for there were not only the crops to be weeded and garden plots to be tended and stock to be worked, but there was also all the rebuilding to be done. After the corn crop was harvested, Josh and Muley started looking for cabin timber. Josh measured off the size the structure was to be and started cutting and shaping the logs, notching the ends to fit together. He fashioned this cabin bigger than his old one had been, for in the back of his mind was the notion that one day he would bring Maria here to live. He would ask her someday, when he had the place fixed up the way he wanted it, the way it ought to be for a woman. Because his crop was the earliest in, Josh had shared his corn. He hauled roasting ears to the neighbors and carried grinding corn to the provosts, Mrs. Winslow, Quitman, and Jacob Phipps. He had even given some to Dent Sessom and Alfred Noonan, living like a pair of boar hogs in the squalor of old Noonan's place. This, with the game they killed, saw the settlers through until their own crops could ripen. In return, they owed Josh and Muley a cabin raising. They would have done it, dead or not. All, perhaps, but Sessom and Noonan. Those damned reprobates didn't seem to feel they owed anybody anything. Josh was surprised to see Sessom and Noonan ride in the morning everybody was to gather and start raising the cabin. He was not made joyful by their coming. Nevertheless, he tried to be civil.
Didn't figure I'd see y'all.
Never miss a cabin raising. Been to many a one in my day. I do hope you got some drinking whiskey. Me and Sessom, we been wetting our bills.
Josh hesitated to admit it. He and Muley had taken some cattle down into the settlements for trade and had come back with several jugs of whiskey, among other things. It would be neighborly to furnish an occasional snort to friends helping bring up a cabin.
I expect we can dig up a swig or two when the time comes.
There's always time.
Buckaloo, you got something me and Noonan could be doing to help you?
We'll need more clapboards for the roof. I got logs sawed for the job if you all would like to rive them for me.
Normally, one man could rive logs, but Sessom and Noonan made a two-man job of it. The rate they started, Josh calculated they could spend a week, but it would keep them out from underfoot.
Where's Jacob Phipps? Surprised you didn't bring him.
Tell you the truth, Josh, I've been a mite disappointed in him. He ain't been none too friendly of late. You know, one day he even had the gall to tell me and Sessom to get ourselves off of his place. And us old friends the way we was. I swear, you can't put your faith in nobody anymore.
How about you, Dent? Still hunting you a place to buy?
I still got my eye on the place your Mexican friend has got. If he just talk business.
Ramon won't sell, you'd just as well forget it.
A man never can tell what may happen. The Mexicans are liable to decide they want to leave, and I'll be in a position to buy.
They've been here longer than any of us. Nothing is apt to change their minds. You leave them alone, Sessom. You'll likely find somebody else willing to sell if you look around.
I've been watching Jacob Phipps. He's having hell trying to work that place of his with just one good arm. I figure one of these days he'll just give up and take an offer. Who knows, I might be able to buy his land and the Hernandez place both if they go cheap enough. He'd have me for a neighbor on both sides of you, Buckaloo.
Josh would as soon have a Comanche village on one flank and the cannibalistic Carrancoas on the other. A couple of horses showed up to the west and a high-wheeled Mexican cart drawn by mules. Ramon Hernandez led the way on a big brown horse. He was bringing the whole family, Miranda, the baby, Maria, and all the brothers and sisters. Hickory loped out to greet them. From east came Aaron and Rebecca Provost on their wagon, bringing with them Mrs. Winslow and Patrick and all the young provosts. O.C. Quitman rode alongside with Lanky Daniel Provost. The provost children jumped out of their wagon and raced toward the Hernandez family.
Gregorio! Hey, Gregorio!
Presently, the women hauled out their cooking utensils and took a critical look at a side of beef which had been placed over the coals early in the morning. Pretty soon, Muley became bored with it all and trailed off after the youngsters. Josh noticed that O.C. Quitman's gaze absently followed the women.
Been a long time now since he lost his wife. Nature's starting to work on him. Probably going to thinking more and more about Heather Winslow. And he ought to. She's a right handsome woman.
One by one, the men commenced getting up and looking for work to do. The foundation logs went down first. Then the builder started rolling up the side walls. By dusk, when Josh called a halt, they had the project well started. They were a long way from reaching the roof line, but the women would have a place to sleep tonight, indoors. The smoke from the cooking fire smelled good to Josh, for his stomach growled in complaint, and his muscles ached from straining with the heavy logs. He took a cup and walked to the fire, where Heather Winslow was stirring beans in a pot. He filled the cup with coffee and paused to visit a little.
How's the school coming, Mrs. Winslow?
Well, not good, not bad. We just have to make do with what little we've got. Do you know we only have two books for the children to learn from? The Bible and Pilgrim's Progress. We have a copy of the United States Constitution, too, but we never got past that part about pursuit of happiness. Daniel Provost said he's pursued deer, but he didn't know you had to pursue happiness. He'd never seen it run.
Happiness is a hard thing to catch hold of sometimes. Maybe it don't run exactly, but it's got a habit of slipping away from you.
This ought to be a happy place you have here, Mr. Buckaloo. I like the way the creek lies and all those trees. I like the view as you stand here and look off to the south and east. It will be a good place to bring a woman. It's going to be a big cabin. Of course, you'll have to find a place to put Muley once Maria comes to live here.
I'll build him another cabin.
You sound as if you already have your plans made.
I've done a lot of studying.
Then maybe you ought to talk with Maria. I think that she's not sure what your intentions are.
I figured they've always been understood without me saying.
By you, maybe, but not by her, Mr. Buckaloo. A woman doesn't like things taken for granted. She wants to hear them said out loud.
Truth is, Mrs. Winslow, I never have been around women much. I had some sisters, but they was older, and I never did understand them anyway. They all cussed about men, then up and married the first ones that come along and asked them. Maria, she was not much more than a little girl first time I ever saw her. I reckon that's the way I've thought of her until just lately.
Till you realized all of a sudden that she was a grown woman, like her sister had been.
I rode up to their house one day, and for a minute I would have sworn she was Teresa. It was like all the years had rolled away and Teresa had come back from the long ago. You got no idea the way I felt.
I can imagine. It would be as if my Jim were to ride in here right now. Come back to life. It could happen, you know. I mean, somebody could come along who looked like Jim, who talked like him. But it wouldn't be Jim. Nobody else could ever be him. No matter how much he looked like him. Or how much I wanted him to be. Jim's dead. There's no use me looking for him.
Is the teacher trying to teach me something?
Just this, Mr. Buckaloo. Maria is a woman with a love in her, and she'd be good for a man who really loved her. But a person who has room for so much love also has room for a lot of hurt. Don't you hurt her.
I wouldn't for the world.
You might not mean to. Be careful with her, Mr. Buckaloo.
After supper, Maria took a bucket and walked down toward the creek in the near darkness. O.C. Quitman sat on his heels by a small campfire. He watched the girl go out of sight over the creek bank. Quitman pushed to his feet, stretched, and then began moving toward the line of trees, taking his time, as if he had no place to go, nothing to do but exercise his legs. He walked down the creek bank and met Maria, starting up, straining with the bucket.
Oh, that looks heavy. I'll carry it for you.
She stood frozen in surprise, the bucket at arm's length.
I'll take it.
Why?
I told you, it's too heavy.
I've been carrying buckets like this for years. I'll carry them the rest of my life.
Well, I'll carry this one.
How have you been, Mr. Quitman?
All right, been working awful hard.
It seems to do you good. You look well.
I look like a tired man older than I really am. But work's good for a man, especially if he's got heavy things on his mind. Keeps him too busy to worry much or grieve. Work's a good healer.
I suppose.
Miss Hernandez, I followed you down here on purpose.
For what reason?
To talk to you. To unload a little bit of guilt, maybe. I've said things I'm not proud of. I've been wanting you to know. I carried an awful anger before. I worked a lot of it off, I think.
Have you changed your thinking about things?
Now, I wouldn't lie to you. Some things burn so deep in a man that he can't root them out, no matter how much he'd like to. But I want you to know I'm sorry for the pain I've caused you. I had no right.
I have no grudge against you, Mr. Quitman.
Well, I didn't have the right. It was just in me to hurt you. To hurt all of you.
That's all behind us. Anyway, you apologized before.
The way I apologized was an insult in itself. I didn't mean it, and you could tell I didn't. Now I do mean it.
A faint smile tugged at her mouth. He was hunched over, leaning strongly to the side where he held the bucket of water.
That looks heavy, Mr. Quitman. Maybe you should let me carry it.
He eased at the sight of her smile.
You've just taken a heavy load off of my shoulders, Miss Hernandez. I reckon I can carry the bucket.
Josh kept the jugs hidden out and fetched them one at a time at a deliberate rate calculated to keep anyone from getting drunk. There was no stopping old man Noonan, though. For every swallow anyone else took, he took three. Josh found the cabin getting completely out of hand. Aaron Provost virtually took over the project. What Josh had seen as a two-day job turned into quite a bit more, and his envisioned one-room cabin became a big double cabin with a liberal dog run separating the two halves, one common roof over the whole structure. When the roof finally went up, it didn't lack much being as big as the one they'd built for the Provosts. When the cabin was finished, Aaron Provost gathered the others around him and walked out 100 feet, turning to look back in the dusk. He made a sweeping gesture with his hand.
Well, what it lacks for Purdy, it sure makes up for Stout. You can live to be 106, Josh, but you'll never have a better house.
I don't know why I'd ever want a better one. All I can say is thank you.
You're welcome. We owed it to you, and by Johnny, there can't nobody say a Texan don't pay his debts. It's all complete, Josh, floor to the roof. Got fireplaces, got tables and benches, and a bed. All you lack now is a woman to put in it. That's something you're just going to have to take care of for yourself.
Aaron squeezed Maria's shoulder. She looked down, her face reddening.
It'll be time enough.
Not as much as you think, maybe. Winter's coming. Fireplace ain't going to be enough to keep you warm.
Osi Quitman watched Maria's face, and his eyebrows furrowed as he listened to Aaron's good-natured joking.
Josh, you still got another jug hit out.
Just one more. That's all that's left.
Well, let's get it then. No house is finished proper till the builders have had him a chance to take a drink under its roof.
Aaron put his arm around Josh's shoulder and pulled him toward the cabin. The others followed. Only Maria waited there and Quitman. She stared at the new cabin, her dark eyes beginning to glisten.
You ought not to be shedding tears, Miss Hernandez. It's a good house. From what I hear, it's going to be yours.
That's what everybody says. Everybody but Josh.
Well, he hasn't asked you?
No.
You want him to?
For a long time, I've wanted him to. Now I'm not sure anymore.
Well, I thought you were in love with him.
I thought so, too. I've thought so ever since I was a girl. But love has to come from two people. I cannot be with one.
You don't think he loves you?
I think he thinks he does. But it isn't really me. It never was.
So, what are you gonna do about it?
What can I do? Wait till he asks me, then tell him we've both been wrong.
Well, it'll be a disappointment to him.
At first. Till he realizes I'm right.
And this cabin that's been built for you?
There will be another woman sometime. One who doesn't look like my sister Teresa. One he can love for herself and not for somebody else.
Maria.
Yes?
Maria, I lost somebody once. She didn't look anything like you. I don't hardly know how to say it.
I think I know what you're trying to say. Be careful.
Maria, I wronged you and I worried over it. I couldn't figure out why it ought to bother me so much. The last few days here, seeing you all the time, I knew why.
Mr. Quitman, don't...
You got every cause to hate me. I got no right to expect anything else. And if I told you I'd lost all the feeling I've had against your people, I'd be lying to you. But damn it, Maria, in spite of all that...
She stared at him in painful silence.
The last few days, I've fought it. My eyes have followed you everywhere you moved, and I've fought it. I didn't no way want it to happen, but it's happened anyhow. So help me, Maria. Curse me. Hit me. Do something to make me stop being in love with you.
I'm not sure I want to.
It isn't any good. I ought not to have told you.
You didn't have to. I've sensed it as long as you have.
You must have been laughing at me.
No, it wasn't funny.
Then you must have hated me.
Her fingers reached out and gently closed over his hand.
I don't hate you. I never did.
He took a step forward, close to her. He reached a hand behind her neck and pulled her toward him, bending. Her face turned upward and her eyes closed as he found her lips. He kissed her with a cautious gentleness. Her arms went around him and her mouth pressed tighter. And he cast away the caution, the gentleness. He let loose the pent-up anger and the hunger and the aching loneliness that had built so long.
Maria! Quitman, what in the...
O.C. Quitman turned loose of the girl and faced Josh. Josh seemed frozen in his tracks. Then he moved, fists clenched.
Buckaloo, it ain't like it looks.
Ain't it? Maria, you step outside. He ain't going to bother you no more.
Maria didn't move. Her eyes were big and dark and frightened. Josh swung his fist. It struck Quitman solidly on the chin, and he staggered back into Maria. She tried to grab him, but he fell, almost tripping her when he went down. Josh reached down to grab Quitman's shirt and haul him back to his feet.
Josh! Don't do it! Don't!
Damn your soul, Quitman. After all the things you've said, and then you try to take her like this, I'll beat you to death.
Josh! Listen to me!
Josh struck Quitman again, sending him stumbling backward into the log wall. Quitman hunched there, shaking his head, clearing his eyes. Then he surged out swinging. The two men rammed into each other like a pair of bulls fighting. They circled and fell and rolled and pushed to their feet and pounded again until their shirts hung in ribbons and blood streaked their faces like Indian war paint. One went to his knees and then the other. They fought until they were far out from the cabin, almost to the bank of the creek. At the end, they were staggering, and each man almost fell every time he swung. O.C. Quitman finally stumbled and went to his knees and couldn't come up anymore. Josh teetered on the edge of the bank, trying to keep his footing, trying to focus his eyes, trying to find Quitman one more time.
Josh, it's over!
Where's he at?
In fury, Maria gave Josh a push that sent him stumbling backward over the bank and into the cold water of the creek. He splashed and floundered, sputtering.
There! Cool off a little!
She knelt to try to help O.C. Quitman to his feet. Bewildered, Ramon came to her aid. He got Quitman up, staggering. Aaron Provost strode over to the creek bank and climbed down to extend a huge hand to Josh.
Boy, I got no idea what happened between you two, but you sure have tore each other up. Now this is a hell of a way to celebrate a new cabin.
Jug in his hand, old Noonan was snickering to Dent Sessom.
It's that gal, Dent. They'll do it every time. I've been knowing Mexican gals for years and years, and that's the way they'll do you. Hug, kiss, and sweet do you while you're there, and the minute you're out of sight, they're flashing their eyes at somebody else.
Ramon Hernandez reached down for a handful of mud from the edge of an old rain puddle. Noonan's mouth was wide open when Ramon came up with his hand and plopped the mud in. Aaron brought Josh up out of the creek. O.C. Quitman waited there, leaning on Maria's thin shoulder for strength. Their eyes met, anger still crackling in Josh's. But the anger had burned out of Quitman. The ashes held only a cold regret.
I didn't mean it to happen, Buckaloo. God help me, I'm in love with your Mexican girl.
The festive mood which had lasted through the building of the cabin was gone like summer smoke. O.C. Quitman sat alone, brooding, his gaze lost in the light fog which masked off the sunrise.
Damn! Looks like Buckaloo could have got a better grade of drinking whiskey us building him a cabin and all. Dent, stir yourself.
What the hell's the matter?
Ain't nothing the matter. All of a sudden, I got me a notion things is fixing to get better.
He could see Ramon Hernandez up and moving around, loading his high-wheeled cart.
You ain't no worse off than me. I got an awful taste in my mouth this morning. Can't figure out whether it's like bad whiskey or black mud.
Mud, likely. You got the Mexican to thank for that.
And I do intend to thank him good and proper. Man can't go around letting them chili eaters get away with insults. Or first thing you know, they'll think they own this country again.
What do you intend to do about it?
Dent, I think I figured out something that'll be good for both of us. Me? I got a grudge to settle with Ramon. And anyway, I don't like Mexicans. You've been wanting to buy that piece of land from him, but he won't listen. I bet his widow would listen.
He ain't got no widow.
He's fixing to have. It could happen today. This very morning. Everybody's had Indians on the brain since that raid over at the Hernandez place. Now, if somebody was to shoot Ramon, who do you reckon would catch the blame for it?
The Comanche.
You're so burned up, Dent. Now, the way I see it, them Mexicans will leave breakfast pretty soon and start home. Way things went to hell here last night, there'll be one to leave. We could do the same. Only we could double back, riding the creek a ways to lose our tracks, then lay in wait where the brush comes up close to the trail. After it's done, we just follow the creek till we lose our tracks again. Then we go on home with nobody the wiser, and Ramon Hernandez a hell of a lot deader.
What'll Jacob Phipps think?
He won't need to know. We come here without him, we can leave without him.
It's a pleasure to know you, Noonan. I'm proud to ride with a man who uses his head for something besides a place to put his hat. You're gonna give me the first shot?
Think you're sober enough to hit him?
I'll be sober enough, if there's one more drink left in that jug.
Looks like a host would see to it he had enough whiskey so a man didn't run out.
As a smuggler and a filibusterer in Texas even before the days of Stephen F. Austin, old Noonan had done his share of fighting against Mexican soldiers and customs officers, as well as against Indians. When Dent Sessom started to tie his horse in the brush, the old man impatiently grabbed the reins.
Damn it, Dent, you're as green as a gourd vine. Your horse is liable to jerk loose when the shooting starts and leave you afoot. Tie a rope to your reins and hang on to it. That way you always got a hold of him. A horse is lots of things, but smart ain't one of them. He don't like a rifle going off in his face. This way, you get far enough from him that he don't spook so bad. You got both arms free, and still you don't let him run loose.
A thin fog still clung to the ground and obscured the view of anything more than 50 yards away. They crouched a long time in the brush till Dent Sessom's legs went stiff. His fingers played nervously up and down the stock of his long rifle.
I sure do wish I had me another jug.
You'd be drinking out of it, and you couldn't shoot straight.
Why don't they hurry up and come on? You sure we got out ahead of them, Noonan? They could have already passed this way.
Calm down, Dent. You're getting the shakes, and that ain't going to help none. They'll be along directly.
Oh, I swear it's getting cold. Fall ain't far enough along for it to be this cold.
It's just you. You got the trembles from that whiskey wearing off. Scared, Dent?
What I got to be scared of?
Nothing. That's what I'm trying to tell you. A Mexican's easy to kill. Just send a bullet whistling by his ear and he'll die of fright.
That ain't the way I heard tell about the war.
Folks lie. There ain't nothing to kill on a Mexican. You'll see. Square yourself up. See what I told you, Dent? You can hear one of the Mexican carts a mile away. Now, you get a hold of yourself.
They crouched lower and waited. Sessom's hands still played nervously up and down the rifle stock and on the barrel. Cold sweat popped out on his forehead, and he rubbed his sleeved arm across his face.
Dent, you sure you still want first shot? Maybe I better take it.
I took a right smart off of him, too. I took it off all of them. I want my bullet in him first.
All right, but don't you miss.
Both men squinted and tried to see into the fog. Sessom's tongue darted back and forth across his dry lips, and again he rubbed his sleeve over his face.
There they come. You can see them now.
Ramon Hernandez rode his brown horse a little in front of the cart. He held a rifle balanced across his lap. The two Mexican women and the children rode in the cart, all but the boy Gregorio. He trailed behind a horseback. In his hands was an old blunderbuss.
Now, Dent, you just move slow and don't be in no hurry. He'll be in your sights plenty long enough.
Sessom licked his lips nervously and leveled the rifle, resting its long barrel across a limb. His hands trembled.
Wait, Dent, you're gonna miss! See there, Dent, I told you missed him!
Noonan brought his own rifle into line. Through the black smoke, he saw a small figure lurch forward in the cart.
Oof. Hit one of the women.
The horses danced in fright, jerking against the reins looped over Noonan's and Sessom's arms.
He'll be coming in a minute, that Mexican. If he sees us, we'll have to kill them all.
What do we do?
We spilt our chance. We better be getting the hell up and gone. One good thing. He'll move cautious, thinking we was a parcel of Indians. It'll give us some time to clear out.
They rode in a hard run for a few hundred yards, then slowed to an easier lope to spare the horses. After a couple of miles, they gradually came to a stop.
Hear anything?
Only you. My old ears ain't the best anyhow. Maybe you better listen for both of us.
Quiet as a grave.
Didn't figure he'd come chasing us and leave the women and kids. Especially him not knowing but what we was Indians.
I seen that woman fall. You shot her instead of Ramon, didn't you?
Ain't no way to tell. Never pleasured me none to kill a woman. But them Mexican women breed more little ones anyway. And little ones grow into big ones, and we just have to kill them someday.
They rode west until they struck a creek, then rode down the bank into the water. They rode in the water's edge for a couple of miles, glancing back occasionally for sign of pursuit.
I reckon we've been far enough. Let's get up out of this creek and head for home.
Suits me.
He touched spurs to his horse and climbed up the steep bank, Noonan trailing. As he reached the top, Sesame suddenly jerked on the reins.
Noonan!
Sesame's horse lost its footing and slid back into Noonan's with an impact that jarred the old man loose from the saddle. Still gripping his rifle, he slammed against the muddy ground and pushed himself to his feet.
Get back here!
Mouth open, Noonan stood on wobbly legs and stared in helpless fear at the half-dozen riders who suddenly towered above him on the creek bank. He got a glimpse of feathers and bare chests and bows, of gotch-eared ponies and bull-hide shields. He raised the rifle and remembered he never had taken time to reload it. Dropping it, he turned to run in the soft mud. A sharp pain stopped him in mid-stride. He grabbed at his side and felt his fingers clasp the shaft of an arrow embedded between his ribs. The numbness passed, and the pain rushed on with the sudden intensity of hellfire. Twisting half around, Noonan stared in horror at the warrior heeling his pony down the bank and coming at him in a run. He stared in deadly fascination at the heavy stone axe in the Indian's hand. He saw the strong brown arm come up. His eyes followed the downward arc of the stone as it swung savagely toward his head. The last sound he heard was his own terrified scream.
Mr. Quitman didn't eat much. He said he wasn't hungry. Drank the coffee, that was about all.
Joshua Buckaloo sat, frowning down at his heavy cowhide boots.
He wants to know how long before we're ready to leave. He's impatient.
Ain't no use you two parting with this thing hanging over you. Sooner or later, you both got to come to some understanding. Now why not start now and get it done with?
What's there to talk about? We try to talk, like as not, we'll end up fighting again. He done what he done, and that's all there is to it.
He didn't go too. You ought to know him well enough to realize that of all the women on earth, Maria would be one of the last he'd want to fall in love with. Man just can't always help himself.
The whole subject pains me. I'd assume not talk no more.
Rebecca, you got them kids about ready to go? There's no use us wasting more time around here. It's a long ways.
You and the boys can load the wagon.
I appreciate all you done building me this cabin. I'm sorry things went to hell at the last.
Well, life's that away. About the time you figure you finally got everything on a downhill pull, something comes along and stands you on your head.
He walked out of the cabin, paused in the dog run to frown at the lingering fog, then strode on out into the yard. Most times, Josh would have helped them tote their goods to the wagon, but this morning it wasn't in him. He hated to see them all leave, yet he wanted to be alone a while to think things clear. Josh cast a glance toward Osie Quitman, who sat on his rolled blankets way out yonder. It came to him that Aaron had been right about one thing. Feeling the way he did about Mexican people, Osie Quitman wouldn't have wanted to let himself develop any feeling for Maria Hernandez. Not even a passing physical desire, much less anything stronger or more lasting. Josh let his gaze follow Quitman as the man pushed to his feet and began to pace restlessly. With the kind of pride Quitman had, it tormented his soul to find out just how human he really was. Under other circumstances, Josh might have found it in himself to pity Quitman, if it had been some other Mexican girl, but not Maria. Daniel Provost brought up the horses and began to help Aaron harness the team. Osi Quitman came near the cabin for the first time and saddled his own horse. He carefully avoided looking at Josh. Heather Winslow stopped beside Josh.
It's a good house, Mr. Buckaloo. And this thing with Maria, you'll get it straightened out. I never met a better girl.
Thank you. I'm sorry you had to be around and see it. I expect you were disappointed with Osi Quitman. And with me.
I'll live over it, Mr. Buckaloo. And so will you.
She walked out to the wagon and helped Patrick Quitman up and into the bed of it with the Provost youngsters. Aaron Provost gave each of the two women a lift up and then placed his foot on the right front wheel and swung his big frame onto the seat.
Come on over when you can, Josh. We'll shoot a fat doe.
Yeah! Osi Quitman sat on his horse, waiting for the wagon to come even with him. When it did, he pulled in beside it. Daniel Provost a horseback on the other side. Quitman looked back over his shoulder at Josh. He rode a few yards, pulled around, and came to the cabin.
Buckaloo.
Yes?
Buckaloo, I... Oh, hell, what can a man say?
He turned and started after the wagon. Three guns. Even counting the old blunderbuss, Ramon had left here with only two.
Quitman, they're in trouble.
Get your horse!
Aaron Provost wheeled the wagon around and brought his team back in a long trot.
Daniel, give me your horse! You women and kids, back into the cabin!
Muley, help Daniel guard the cabin.
Quitman was about 40 yards in the lead when Josh and Aaron and Jacob Phipps swung into their saddles. Josh spurred hard to catch up. Aaron and Phipps never did catch up, quite. Riding in at a gallop, Josh listened for other shots. He heard none. Why hadn't there been more? The question ran again and again through his brain. Maybe they'd been overrun. He could think of several reasons, and he didn't like any of them. Through the fog, he saw the dark shape that must be the cart.
Yonder equipment ahead of us!
They slowed their horses to a trot, wary, and only then did Aaron and Phipps catch up. Rifle cradled high, ready for trouble, Josh squinted, trying to see. The fog drifted a little, and he could make out the huddle of figures around the cart.
There! They look like they're all right.
Ramon whirled, the rifle in his hands. He lowered it as recognition came.
Careful! They may still be around here!
Josh tried to see through the tight group of frightened figures.
Ramon, is everybody all right?
Josh, Maria shot!
Josh hit the ground and dropped the reins. Maria lay still.
Maria!
Miranda Hernandez gave him a quick glance, and he could see dread in her eyes. She had torn open the neck of Maria's dress and was pressing a crimson-soaked handkerchief to a wound above Maria's breast.
Oh, it is bad, Josh.
Josh lifted the handkerchief. He saw the ragged hole which a rifle ball had torn.
Did it go all the way through?
The ball is still in there.
Then we gotta get her to the cabin, and quick.
He looked up, and his gaze stopped at Osi Quitman. The man's face was drained of color.
Ramon, where was they shooting from?
There. Two shots. I fired back one time. I heard two horses run away.
Well, you reckon they're all gone?
I have not tried to go and see.
Yeah, I'll go see.
Quitman, if they're there, they'll kill you.
Quitman did not slow down or look back. He kept walking, the rifle up and ready. He moved stiffly, as if whittled from wood.
You'll be all right, Maria. I promise. You'll be all right.
They're gone.
Cautiously, Aaron and Jacob Phipps followed Quitman.
Ramon, let's put her into the cart.
By the time they'd rolled blankets and placed Maria in the cart, the other three men were back.
How is she?
Bad.
It wasn't engines. We found boot heel marks out there and tobacco juice.
It was Dent Sessom and old Noonan.
They must have thought we'd never look at their tracks. They've been drinking. Maybe they didn't think at all.
They must have been after me. They hit Maria instead.
We'll settle with them later. Let's get Maria back where we can take care of her.
You got a pistol in your belt, Buckaloo. I want it.
What for?
I'm not waiting. I'm going after them now. I can't go up against two men with just a rifle. Whichever one I shot, the other would get me while I reloaded.
We'll all go, Quitman. Together. But first we gotta think of Maria.
I am thinking of her, and I'm thinking of them that shot her. You stay with her, Buckaloo. It's your place. She's your girl. She always was.
Quitman reached and took the pistol out of Josh's belt. Josh could see murder in his eyes.
We could be wrong. It could have been somebody else. It's the government's place to pass judgment.
We're not wrong. And we got no government. Not out here. I'll see you when I get back. You take good care of that girl, Buckaloo.
Jacob Phipps blocked Quitman's path.
You figuring on shooting them wherever you find them?
Like a pair of killer wolves.
I'll go with you, Quitman.
Old Noonan's a friend of yours, ain't he, Phipps?
He used to be.
And you stay here. I don't want to fight three men.
Wait, Quitman.
Don't you give me no trouble, Phipps.
Quitman swung onto his horse, rode out to the brush, paused a moment, then moved into the fog, following the tracks.
Old Noonan's a big talker and all, but he's been a fighter in his time. He'd fight again if Quitman was to corner him.
If we get the bullet out and if we can tell Maria's going to do all right, we'll go help Quitman.
That may not be soon enough. I think I'd best trail after him.
You worried about him or about Noonan?
Both, I reckon. There was a time I thought a right smart of that old man, even with all his faults. I'd rather see him take his chances with the court than have Quitman shoot him down like a mad dog.
There's no stopping Quitman right now. He's after blood.
Maybe he'll cool off before he catches him. Anyway, I'll trail along.
Josh rode in the cart, holding Maria's cold hand. Every little bit, he would take up the handkerchief to let the blood wash the wound clean, then put it back again. Without help, she would have bled to death before now. Times when he felt he was going to break down, Miranda would reach across and grip his arm.
Faith, Josh. Faith.
They carried Maria into the cabin, the white-faced Rebecca Provost and Heather Winslow rushing ahead to clear a place for her.
The table. We gotta put her on the table and get the bullet out. Go get some hot water started and put an iron on the stove.
Josh and Ramon placed Maria on the heavy table. Josh stood back, looking down on the still girl.
We gotta dig that bullet out. Who's going to do it?
Everybody looked at somebody else. All eyes came back to Josh. He shook his head.
You women. You got skilled fingers.
But it'll take a man to have the stomach for it.
A thing like this, Josh, I got 10 thumbs. That's up to you.
Maria's eyes came partially open.
Don't talk now, Carita.
O.C. Where's O.C.?
Around.
I want him. I want him here.
A taste came to Josh's mouth. A taste like gall.
He'll be here, Maria. Don't you fret. He'll be here.
She lapsed back into unconsciousness. Cold sweat broke on Josh's face.
I don't know if I can do it.
Well, you operated on that bushwhacker boy.
And he died.
When the water was hot, he picked up a knife with a stiletto blade. He had to go by feel rather than sight because the blood kept welling up. Each time his hand started to tremble, he paused, taking a deep breath or two. And while he worked, he prayed. And finally, the ball came out. He let the wound bleed a moment to wash it clean.
I need a hot iron. Oh, Lord, don't let her die again.
Josh was sitting in a rocking chair beside the bed, Ramon pacing nearby. Aaron went to the door.
I can't see him for the fog, but the way he's riding, there's something wrong.
There's a lot wrong. There's an awful lot wrong.
He pushed stiffly to his feet and dragged himself across the dirt floor to stand beside Aaron. Ramon had stepped into the yard. Jacob Phipps broke out of the fog, splashing across the creek and up the steep bank.
Quitman's in trouble! Injuns! They got him cornered up in the limestone bluffs! I don't know how long he can hold out!
Aaron grabbed his rifle and went out the door.
How many?
Couldn't tell for the fog. Not for certain. 7 or 8, maybe 10. Too many, that's for sure.
Josh, you coming?
Josh looked at the girl. She hadn't moved or moaned or anything since he had seared the wound. Her face was almost gray.
Maria, we can't leave her now. Damn it, he got himself into this. We tried to tell him.
Maybe you should stay then. We'll go to Quitman.
Josh touched the girl's hand and found it cold as ever, but there was still a pulse.
I don't want to leave her, Ramon, but she'd want me to go. Wait and I'll get my rifle.
He rode hunched, his mind and soul still in that cabin, and only the shell of him out here on horseback, riding in the fall chill. He only half heard Jacob Phipps telling what had happened.
I trailed along behind him a ways, and he must have caught on. All of a sudden, he rode out from behind a live oak tree with his rifle on me and told me to get away and stay away, or he was liable to put a rifle ball through my other arm. I tell you, I was sore tempted to come on back, but I decided maybe I still ought to be around. So I let him have a long start, and I trailed him again. He come to the creek. tracks led off down into the water. I reckon he figured the same as I did, that they was trying to throw off anybody that might come after him. But being who they was, they's head in the general direction of Noonan's cabin. Equipment's tracks led that way, so I followed. It was the fog that saved me when the Indians jumped him. They were so interested in him that they didn't see me. He must have had a little warning, because I heard his horse running before they ever started the whooping. He took out across the creek and headed west toward the bluffs. Them Indians after him like hounds after a rabbit. There was too many of them for me to help him. I trailed along till I knowed he made the bluffs. I heard him fire a shot or two. And after that, I turned and came back here. I'd have stayed if there'd been anything I could do. But they had him hemmed, and I couldn't have got through to him.
They came to the creek, and Josh could see the tracks where the Indians had gone up the opposite bank.
They were coming down the creek. Quitman was going up the creek, following Sesame and Noonan.
Then the Indians must have run into Sesame and Noonan before they found Quitman.
I thought of that a while ago. I figured Quitman wasted his trip. Them Indians likely already done to Sesame and Noonan what he was intending to do. More, even.
Josh knew the bluffs Phipps had spoken of. He had sought wild cattle here many times, and mustangs.
It's not far anymore. We better spread out a little and keep a careful watch. We don't want them jumping us by surprise. We'd rather have it the other way.
If Quitman was still alive, the best chance they had to rescue him was by using their one bit of leverage, surprise.
Quitman's rifle. I know the sound of it. They ain't got him yet.
He's likely found him a good place with the bluff to his back. They can't get to him except straight on.
Now, the Comanche, he loves a good fight long as he knows he's gonna win it. But he don't fancy suicide. They're probably just laid up there figuring on wearing him down.
Quitman's got his rifle and my pistol. Long as he don't let both of them get empty at the same time, they'll show him a lot of respect. They know that sooner or later he's either gotta come out or starve. Time don't mean much to an Indian.
Right now we need old Sam Houston to general for us. I don't like suicide any more than the Comanches do.
Josh found all the men looking to him for leadership. He didn't want it. He wasn't sure he knew enough to give it to them. He had no plan. All he'd thought of was that Quitman was trapped and it was up to them to get him out of trouble. How, he didn't know.
Since we know he's still there, let's go easy. Take our time and figure how we can do this right. Fog ought to let us get in pretty close.
They were near the bluffs now. Josh raised his hand for a halt. He leaned forward in the saddle, listening. He pushed on, slower now, watching where his horse stepped, keeping him away from rocks that he might kick and cause a noise. He held up his hand again and halted to listen. Somewhere up there, he reasoned, the Indians' horses were being held in a safe place, away from gunfire. Josh swung down from the saddle and looked back.
Ramon, you want to go with me? Aaron, you and Jacob watch after our horses.
At length, Josh saw something move and he dropped to one knee, pointing. Ramon nodded. There were the Indian horses. As the fog drifted, Josh glimpsed an Indian a horseback, tending them. The brave's attention was not on the horses, however. He was looking westward, where the bluffs lay.
He's not looking for any trouble from this way.
You want to try to get him? I could use my knife.
Not yet. If something went wrong, he might raise an alarm before we're ready. Let's ease around him and see how the rest of them are spread out.
Crouching, they moved at a tangent from the Indian horses, carefully keeping to the live oak brush for cover. The warriors had spread themselves in a ragged line just back from Quitman's position at the base of the bluff. He was bottled up in there like whiskey stoppered in a jug. Josh pointed, and Ramon nodded. Josh made a sign for retreat. When they were back with Aaron and Phipps, Josh knelt and drew a rough map on the ground.
This here is the bluff. Right here is Quitman. The Comanches are scattered along like this, here and here and here. We couldn't see them all, but we took a count on their horses. There was 10 plus Quitman's. Two of them horses belonged to Sesame Noonan.
I figured that.
If all the Indians was mounted to start with, and they picked up Sesame's and Noonan's horses extra, that comes out to 8 men.
4 of us. That's 2-1.
Quitman makes 5. From where he's at, he can help.
I never did go much for Indian fighting, not even when the odds was in our favor.
We got no choice except to leave Quitman there. Likely these are braves out on a horse raid. If we don't stop them here, they'll come on and hit one of us anyway. Maybe all of us. We still have to fight.
You got a plan, Josh?
Not much. We just hit them and hope the surprise makes up for the difference in numbers.
Lately it seems all we've done is fight. The war first, then Mexicano army stragglers, then that group of Redland renegades, now the Indians.
It's a raw country. If we stay here, there'll be more fighting yet before we've won this land free and clear. And I intend to stay.
If I fight now, perhaps my sons will never have to.
Everybody has to fight in his own way and in his own time. You're all ready to go, I hope.
They made a long arc to the left, walking their mounts slowly and watchfully. At length, Josh put up his hand.
We've got them outflanked now. From here, we can ride in on them and take them one at a time. The horses will be yonder. We'll rush the horses first and drive them right in on top of the Indians. If that don't confuse them, nothing will.
He started to go on, but he hesitated. There was one more thing which needed to be said.
Quitman's just one man. If he lives but one of us dies, we haven't gained anything. We've just swapped lives. I'm no hero, and I got no wish to ever be one. Let's just hit them hard and fast and make as little target as we can get by with.
They moved into a trot toward the horses. Josh leaned forward, straining to see the horses. When suddenly they showed through the fog, he saw that the Indian guarding them was still mounted, looking toward the cliff. Josh touched spurs to his horse and moved into a run. The Indian turned, surprised. For a second or two, he stared in disbelief. Then he brought up his bow with his left hand as his right hand reached back for an arrow from his quiver. Before the arrow touched the bowstring, Josh plowed into it. He drove the rifle butt into the warrior's ribs, then swung it up and jammed it against the chin. Then Ramon was there, knife blade flashing. The horses shied away, moving toward the Indians. Josh waved his hat and shouted. The other men started shouting too. The horses broke into a run. The first Indian jumped up from behind a scrub oak, consternation in his eyes. Not quite comprehending, he waved his arms and shouted, trying to turn the horses. They split around him. Josh's rifle butt slashed and the Indian fell. The racket stirred the others, who couldn't see clearly through the fog, but knew instinctively that something had gone wrong. Josh fired, knowing as he did so that for the rest of this run, he was carrying an empty rifle. Well, by George, at least it would make a damn good club. Another Indian arose, arrow fitted. Josh dropped down over his horse's off shoulder. He felt the impact as it struck his saddle, and a sudden burn told him it had at least creased his thigh. The Indian fell.
Two shots gone. Only two shots left among us.
His horse stumbled, almost fell, caught its footing, and ran again. Josh saw the arrow driven into its shoulder.
I'll be lucky to finish this run before he falls.
In front of him, behind him, he could see the bewildered Indians loosing arrows. The horse stumbled. Josh kicked free of the stirrups and hit the ground rolling, holding onto his rifle. He jumped to his feet, hopping, looking around desperately. He held the rifle in both hands like a club. Through the fog, he had a clear view of the bluff now. He saw an Indian rise up and take aim at him, too far away for the clubbed rifle to help him. Partway up the bluff, fire flashed, and the Indian fell.
Up, Josh! Hurry!
Ramon Hernandez spurred to the base of the cliff. Osi Quitman clambered down to meet him. Ramon leaned over, extending his arm. Quitman caught it and swung up, landing on the horse's hips.
One shot left. Wonder who has it.
Aaron Provost slowed to wait for Ramon and Quitman. As a Comanche stepped from behind a live oak, Aaron squeezed off a shot. It missed, but it clipped leaves above the Comanche's head and showered them on him. His arrow went astray.
Let's get out of here!
Aaron came in a lope. Ramon and Quitman were just behind him. Looking back over his shoulder, Josh saw a couple of arrows take flight, but they would fall short.
We're out of their range.
They circled around the horses and brought them finally to a nervous, milling stop. Josh felt his thigh and his hand came away with a small streak of blood. The arrow had not cut deep.
Anybody hit?
No one else was except Osi Quitman, whose arm was bleeding.
Well, just enough to teach me humility. I'll live. Man, I don't know what to say. I hope thanks will do.
That's good enough. I expect you'd have done the same for any of us.
They as good as had me. I was almost out of powder. You went and trailed me even after I told you not to.
Seemed like the thing to do.
And you. You're the one who went in there and picked me up. You're the last one who had any reason to do it.
I had a reason. Maria.
She's all right, isn't she? You wouldn't have left her if she wasn't all right, would you?
She looked bad when we left her.
And you ought to have stayed.
The women were there. They could do as much as I could.
Josh, I wonder why you came after me at all. I've caused you a right smart of trouble. I think the best thing for me to do is take my son and go somewhere... to get away from here.
Let's talk about it later. Right now, you better catch that bay. I'll take Sesame's horse. I don't have the nerve to try to get my saddle. Not right now. Let's go see about Maria.
Rebecca Provost and Heather Winslow waited anxiously in the doorway as the men rode into view. Josh could see them counting fearfully, making sure no one was missing. Rebecca hurried out and threw her arms around Aaron as he stepped out of the saddle. Muley and the children came running, and Josh dropped his reins into the first pair of eager hands. Osi Quitman grabbed up his son and gave him a fierce hug, then set him down. Together, he and Josh walked to the door. Heather Winslow met them there. Tears stained her cheeks.
What about Maria?
She's conscious now. We tried to lie to her about where you'd all gone, but I think she knew.
Josh!
I'm right here, Maria.
Did you find Osi? Did you bring him?
We found him, Maria. He's here. Go on. It's you she was calling for when we took the bullet out. It's you she really wants, not me.
I'm here. I'm here if you want me.
Yes, Osi. I want you.
He dropped himself down beside her, his cheek to her own.
I'm not a good man for you. You know me. I'm hard and I'm mean, and when I get an idea in my stubborn head, nobody can tell me I'm wrong.
I am stubborn, too.
It won't be easy. You know how I've been. I'll be hard to change.
But I want you, Osi.
Josh turned and walked toward the door, where Heather waited.
She'll live, Heather. She wants to, and she's a strong little woman, that Maria. Anything she wants bad enough, she'll get.
And she wants Osi Quitman.
Josh nodded.
You'd give her up? Just like that?
What I'm giving up is a dream, Heather. A mirage. Maria never was mine to give up, really. There was a time she thought she loved me, I guess, but she was just a girl. She hadn't met anybody else. I thought I loved her, too, and in a way I did. I still do. But it was never right. Not from the start.
He stepped outside and leaned against the wall, his gaze drifting aimlessly over the field, over the rolling prairie and the sun-cured grass.
She took me back, Heather. That's all it ever really was. When I was with Maria, it was like she had come to me from somewhere out of the past, out of a time that was gone, but that I never could quite turn loose of. She wasn't really Maria, not to me. She was always somebody else. Somebody I had to say goodbye to years ago, but never quite let go of. Deep inside me, I guess I've sensed it a while now. That's why I never could bring myself to talk to her about marrying me. A while ago, when I took the bullet out, I found myself praying she wouldn't die again. Die again. It wasn't Maria I prayed for. It was her sister, Teresa. It was always Teresa.
Do you think you can turn loose now?
It won't be easy, but I'll have to.
Josh, well, I had to once. Maybe, if you want me to, I could teach you how.
He turned and looked at her as if he had never seen her before. It occurred to him that he never really had.
Maybe you can, Heather. Maybe you can.
Texas Sunrise is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2008, Elmer Kelton. Published by arrangement with the estate of Elmer Kelton, care of Sobel Weber Associates Incorporated, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2012, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Terrence Aselford, Eric Messner, Danny Gavigan, Thomas Keegan, Tim Pabone, Yasmin Toison, Michael Glenn, Elizabeth Jernigan, Scott McCormick, James Konicek, David Coyne, Michael John Casey, Drew Copas, Alyssa Wilmoth, Christopher Graybill, Catherine Aselford, Nick DePinto, David Harris, Bradley Smith, Richard Rowan, Patrick Bussink, Bobby Aselford, Gary Tells, Tim Carlin, Nanette Savard, Ren Casey, and Mort Shelby. Additional red shirts by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Terrence Aselford. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Patrick Stratton and Damian Chop Richardson. Book adapted for graphic audio by Catherine Aselford. With original music by Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed Texas Sunrise, be sure to look for Elmer Kelton's The Wolf and the Buffalo. Available at road stops everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, audio guides, and podcasts. Keep listening for previews of other thrilling titles in Graphic Audio.
Smoke Jensen's wife is shot. He will carve a bloody path through all of Colorado, leading straight to the heart of the villain. If you think you know violence, you ain't seen nothing yet. Don't miss The Visceral Revenge in The Mountain Man number 39. Assault of the Mountain Man. Available now in Graphic Audio.
Graphic Audio presents Stephen L. Kent, Rogue Clone.
Look, they're showing the Barefoot Contessa at the theater over there. Maybe we can go see it tomorrow? Do you think Ava's a clone?
You're still not going on about that actress. Who cares if she's a clone? How would I know if she's a clone?
I don't know. I mean, I figured you being a clone and all, you might know.
It's not like that. Most clones don't even know that they're clones. They die if they...
Oh, right. I heard about that. They die if they find out they're clones. Is that for real? I heard about that, but I never believed it. How come you didn't die when you found out?
I'm not a normal clone. I'm a liberator. Liberator clones don't have the death reflex.
Aren't liberators supposed to be dangerous?
I make my living beating the shit out of people in an Iron Man competition. I guess that makes me dangerous.
Did you know that you're a fugitive from the law, Harry? Ever heard of the Elite Conscription Act?
Can't say that I have.
It's brand new. Congress just enacted it. It gives all four branches of the military the right to call men back to active duty, whether they want to go back or not.
Just like that? They passed a new law and poof, I'm recalled. I thought Moreland didn't want me in his corps.
Moreland isn't in charge anymore. He was killed in action on Hubble. The aliens he said didn't exist killed him and his division.
No shit.
You know, the aliens that you saw, the ones that don't exist, they're taking over the galaxy. At least we think it's them. No one else has seen them and lived. No one but you.
Grenadiers forward. Rifles, cover the rear. Peterson, out here now. Watch the walls.
The what?
They're spiders, damn it. They're crawling up walls.
Oh, shit! They're all around us!
Pull your pistols!
I'll slow the bastards down!
Use grenades. Don't worry about the trip home. Got any rockets left?
It's all I've got left.
Give it here.
I can't...
Shut it, asshole. I'll be right behind. Now, move!
Lieutenant! Those fucking spiders are coming in behind us!
Run! Go! Just go!
Available now in Graphic Audio.
If you can't find that Graphic Audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different Graphic Audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.